The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
I'm 52 and I started meditating when I was 16. And so the waves of what I do with my practice changes. And I think being playful and being curious has been really helpful for me. And so that's what I'm doing at the moment. I'm kind of like, I'm going to paint my body with awareness. I don't know where that came from. But it's working at the moment, you know, and I'm also doing some what's called concentration practice, which I never like that translation. But before we start, I want you to find someone in the room that you don't know that well and say your name and spend 3 minutes just asking them, like, why are you here today? Because you always come, just sort of introduce yourself, say your name, and sort of like, what brings you here today? So I'm going to give you 3 minutes. So you have a minute and a half each, 7:45. I'm going to raise, I'm a teacher, I'm sorry, like high school teacher. I'm just going to raise my hand, and if you see me, then you raise your hand, and then we know it's the time to share the sharing. So we have 3 minutes, mini share, introduce yourself, go. And if you're at home, feel free to journal or take a little walk. So my hope, you know, if you see this person or you didn't know before, when you come in, as we say community, say hello. And if you forget their name, just ask again. Okay. It's okay.
They're the same.
Ah, there you go. when Shelley, you know, they're like, oh, come and do Sunday, you know, and I'm only here for 1 weekend. So I'm giving the weekend to my family. I didn't want to. Like, no, I'll do the little Thursday. It's great. Does anybody know the title of this talk? Was it given title? I'm kind of glad because I sent this weird title. And I don't know if it was ever put on that thing. No, well, you know, usually when I talk are the things that I'm currently working with because one of my titles is art teacher, but at the depth of my core, I don't think that art can be taught. You know, philosophically, like I can teach a technique, like this is what you do with clay. But art, you know, it's a big word, right? So the Dharma, the same thing, like Dharma teacher, I'm like, I don't, you know, like, so I see myself as a Dharma sharer. Or, you know, and I usually explain it like when you've seen a really good movie. Like I saw Tar on the way over here. And I'm like, oh my God, Kate Blanchett, girl, that performance, you know, I'm like, I'm recommending to you Tar as a performance. Okay. And I think the Dharma can be like that as you practice and you get benefit from it. There's something much more alive to talk about something that you're being experienced or you're curious about as opposed to being like a catechism teacher, you know, where you are explaining. And there's nothing wrong with that, actually. Sometimes that's exactly what needs to be heard is some of the background. And I'm not. But if that's the only thing you do, then it becomes really dry and brittle and just kind of like just in the head. So for those of you that are new to the Dharma, this is not maybe not going to make a lot of sense. But I also feel that sometimes the Dharma talks are always at the beginning level, and then people that have been practicing a lot never get anything new. Because we're going to talk about metta again. You know? Because metta is, in some ways, it's easy to teach. You know, there's loving kindness, even though it gets taught from a commentarial type. You know, there's the Metta Sutta, and then there's all these other things on how to teach loving kindness. So, because I've told you I'm a teacher, I'm going to make you repeat these words. So, can everyone say paticca? Samuppada. Paticca? Samuppada. Paticca Samuppada. You might forget about it for today, but I have studied other religions, the Catholic mystics, Catholic liberation theology. I don't have negative connotations with Catholicism in El Salvador, where I'm from. The Jesuits that taught me were amazing. And the nuns that I knew were kind. So I don't have any mean nuns. I don't have any abuse. I don't have any, I mean, my associations with Catholicism are beautiful. Okay? Virgin Mary, love her. Jesus, I don't know. I've never, anyway. You know, in college, I took a year of Indian religions while I was living in England. So Sikhism, Hinduism, a bit of Islam in India, and Buddhism. A bit of Mahayana reading, you know, and all the, yeah, so different kinds of religions. And many of the things that we do in this tradition, in the Theravada and early Buddhism, you will find other places. The Avada Patimokkha says, do good, refrain from wrong, purify the mind. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. It's just also the teaching of a lot of other religions. Do good, refrain from wrong, purify the mind. But Paticca-Samuppada is the one thing that I haven't found in other religions. The way I see it is the explanation of the second noble truth. So first noble truth, there's dukkha. And the second noble truth is the cause. And this dependent origination is one of the translations. There's other translations. And the reason why I'm sharing it with you is because many times it's not taught. And it's because there's controversies and there's theological, if there was theological arguments around it. And it's very complicated. But I'm like, people should know that it's there. Because what if you become curious? In the scriptures, it's 12 links of when the meeting of the senses and the object, when there's this meeting, there's a chain reaction that will happen to how suffering happens, right? So one of the controversies is that dependent origination happens in three lifetimes. So it's your past life, your current life, and your next life. So that already will, with people that have a European based culture, do I have to believe in a past life in order to get Paticca-Samuppada? Already you begin in, you can go into this whole thing. So I've read whole books on the debate of it is three lifetimes. And these authors will say Paticca-Samuppada is about three lifetimes, period. And this is the evidence. Which is interesting because if you look at the scriptures, sometimes Paticca-Samuppada doesn't even have 12 links. It has nine. You know, or you look at the way Tibetans will explain it. But this Paticca-Samuppada also talks about avijja in a way that is very interesting. It's ignorance. And it could be the primordial ignorance. Again, in mystic Christianity, the original sin would be not that you're bad. First of all, sin is comes from the Greek, which is just missing the mark from archery. So when you sin, it's like, oops, didn't hit. It hit somewhere else. And when you repent, it just meant you turn around, right? And so with avijja, it all starts with this. The system of suffering starts because we have ignorance. And as we have this, it becomes in ignorance, and then you go suffering, and then you start the cycle of rebirth. If you go into psychoanalytic language, you can also go into, you repeat the same mistakes. And whatever background you have as a child, that's a past life to me. When I was 3 years old, things happened to me. It wasn't my fault. But I also know that somebody fed me. And because that fed me, my brain developed in a certain way. And so my karma, in Buddhist terms, not in the English dictionary explanation of karma, is that there is these lifetimes that I experienced. So when I was a teenager, I looked differently. my thoughts were different, my emotions were different. It's a past life, right? So I grew up in a civil war that had certain, that's a past life. Now I'm living in Australia where it's winter. And they drive on the other side of the thing and they have different money and they have these accents, right? That's like I'm living a different life now. And I started, this is the first time I'm like, I want to show gray because people are like, oh, you look younger. I'm like, I just want to look my age. I don't, you know. Anyway. And so this Paticca Samuppada, what I love about it is that it really goes into also the eye makes contact with this visual stimuli. What's going to happen with that? Will you always be tied to, I'm looking for beautiful things. I'm avoiding ugly things. What are the patterns? So even at that superficial level, you go into various the sounds. Ajahn Chah, my teacher's teacher, used to say, don't bother the sound when you're meditating. And that's been a really important teaching for me. Because when I take the train, Melbourne is a multicultural, vibrant, crowded city. And the trains, just like tons of people. And same as in San Francisco, when I was there, that I can get very calm because I'm not bothering the noise. And I wanted to mention Paticca Samuppada because in the scriptures, it also, the Buddha is quoted in the scriptures as saying, if you understand Paticca Samuppada, you understand the Dhamma. And in some, you know, in some places in Thailand, some places say that if you break one of the 12 links, you're enlightened. Like any of them. And, you know, and it goes into, okay, so I have this contact. And then as you go through the links, it can also look sequential. But experientially, ontologically, right? Ontology, it is this branch of philosophy where it's like, what's real? What's not real? What does it mean to be? What is it meant to be? You know, in post-Einstein science, they're saying, you know, the world is a bit of an illusion. Well, in Buddhism, they've been saying that. In Hinduism, they've been saying that. You know, what does that mean in an experiential thing? It looks very real. But dependent origination is something that you can intellectually think about it, going through the arguments, but it's just something to chew on, masticate, like, okay, what is this teaching? And as you start looking at it, there might be something in there that makes sense to you. That's the first thing I wanted to mention, that Paticca Samuppada exists. And that it's very rich, it's very nuanced. And many times it's presented as an advanced teaching, and so it doesn't get taught. Because teachers don't feel confident going to the 12 Nidanas, you know, like you go and there's whole books analyzing each of the 12 links. There's a big painting with the Lord of Death holding the wheel of this. And in the middle, there's a snake and a pig and a rooster. And that's greed, hatred, and delusion. And that's how the whole wheel is moving. And it can get so incredibly complicated, right? And if you're a scholar, you can totally get into it. But to go back into this thing of there is contact, and the end of it is that you go back into the cycle of rebirth and then pain, grief, and despair, old age, sickness. Like it goes into this whole cycle of suffering. And so by studying this, it's the science. It's the science. It's the meticulously looking at how the process of suffering happens. I haven't seen that in other religions. It's pretty wild. I mean, it's astonishing how there's a beauty to it when you can say there's suffering, nothing special about it. Everybody feels it. You suffer, you suffer, you suffer. Like, I don't know you, but I know you suffer. You suffer, right? Like, it's just, that's just like, the King of England suffers, Lady Gaga suffers. Like, it's just the most mundane thing. And then there's death, which is also the most mundane thing. But I was telling someone that we got this financial planner as a package for, you know, my husband's job, and like, okay, free financial planner. And he kept talking about, heaven forbid something were to happen, be ready. And I'm like, what is this heaven that is forbidding? I'm like, are you talking about death? And so for the second meeting, I said, can you please use the word death? And he said, he kind of chuckles and he goes, you know, 99.99% of my clients do not want to hear the word death. And I was like, oh, I'm the 0.01%. No. And this is the one thing that we share. Like, it's concrete. It's not something that heaven will forbid. Heaven forbid something were to happen. Like, what? And so I'm just putting that, and I was like, what can I teach with Paticca? So, because this is the first time that I'm teaching the brushing, and also the first time that I've mentioned Paticca Samuppada in some of my Dhamma talks, but I've been scared too because of all the controversies, honestly. There are so many opinions about it. And so as you look into it, be curious, you know, if you're interested, and if you're not, fine. But I think that it's a teaching that that's beautiful, okay? Because the third noble truth is, hey, there's an end of suffering. Okay, what does that mean? You know, the coolness of Nirodha. And then the fourth one is the Noble Eightfold Path. So it's presented in Ayurvedic medicine terms. You know, there's a sickness, there's the cause, the prognosis, and then the treatment. And so the second thing I want to talk about, by the way, the title I gave Shelley. But, you know, I want to talk about these complex things that people don't talk about. How about if I call it the simple complexity and the complex simplicity of Dharma practice? She's like, what? Like, yeah, it could mean anything. But as you move into spiritual practice, it can either be a labyrinth where you keep moving, or it feels like a maze where you're feeling, right? And so the hope is that you keep moving and moving around without finding that, because spiritual practice has those things that it's so simple. Like, so be kind. But I led a whole evening on pulling apart kindness. Not simple. What is that? Is it Minnesota nice? Is it, you know, what? How can you be kind if you've never been shown kindness? Right? Can you? And maybe you can. Like, is it just what you can, you know, is, like, to me, for example, one of the most interesting ways of looking at kindness is that if you follow the five precepts, like, that's a definition of kindness. You're not murdering, you're not stealing, you're not using your verbal stuff, you know, you're not ingesting things that will toxify your body, you're not using your sexual energy to hurt yourself or others. If you were to follow that, you'll be quite kind. Without having to be like, I'm sorry, here's some weed. You know what I mean? Like, here's some cookies. I've been given gifts with one guy, one of the works, people at work, and presented this gift, and it was weird, right? So, like, gift giving, dana is like, give it at the right time to the right person, you know, with the right intention. So how do you do that? And so I wanted to say that as you move, whether you've been practicing 15 years or 15 days, to keep it simple and to know that it's complex, how do we do that? Right? Like, I've been counting my steps now for about 5 years, because that's what I've been doing for 5 years. I walk around and I count to 8. And I count to 7, I count to 6, and I'm constantly doing things where I'm practicing throughout the day so that when I sit, silence or non-thinking is not something that I'm expecting to happen just like that. Like, I think that's one of the dangers of instant meditation, or presenting meditation as one more thing you have to do, or meditation as the thing that will cure your anxiety and blah, 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 is that you have your world, your stress, and then you're supposed to sit. It's hard. It's not pleasant. You know what I mean? Like, meditation can be really hard if your life is like, ah. But if you're training throughout, then you can experience calm. How many of you know the word jhana? Can you raise your hand? 1, 2. Okay. So, no, jhana became chan in Chinese, and it became zen in Japanese. So actually, the root word of zen is jhana. And it's the explanation of the eighth part of the Noble Eightfold Part, Sama Samadhi. Controversial. Not a Buddhist thing. So when you look at the Noble Eightfold Path, apart from right view and right intention, which are philosophically quite nuanced in Buddhism, you know, right speech, I mean, right mindfulness is not sati. The Buddha did not invent mindfulness. He didn't invent enlightenment. Like, I think being awake is quite rare, but I'm also 100% convinced the people that maybe lived in Nigeria or in El Salvador or in Chile or in Alaska, that they also experienced awakening. You know, the Buddha does not hold a patent on awakening. And so the jhanas, St. Teresa of Avila was one of my heroes. I went to Avila last year, Spanish nun, middle of the Inquisition, Jewish family. She had to, her grandpa and dad had to convert. It's all the horrible stuff that was going on in Spain. But she used to do the jhanas, which are the meditative absorptions. And there's 8 of them, the 4 material jhanas and the 4 immaterial jhanas. And the way she explains them is with Christian language. And the way Hindus explain it is with Hindus language. So in the stories of the Buddha, he did it when he was 12 years old under a tree. And then he did it again when he was with his teachers. When he got to the 8th jhana, the absorption, they're like, oh, you can be a teacher with us. And he's like, no, there's something more. So jhana is controversial with a few things. So I want to give you an intro. For example, in Sri Lanka, there was a time when everybody said, nobody can do this. There was this German nun, Ayakema, who wanted to teach the jhanas, and she got in trouble. Like, people were persecuting her. Other people will say, don't teach the jhanas. People will become attached. Like, they will say that to you. Or like, oh, it's like being attached to heaven, so don't teach the jhanas. I'm like, if you're going to get attached to something, a meditative absorption is better than gambling, or, you know what I mean? Like, anyway, there are people who think that you cannot get enlightened unless you have the jhanas. So there's these statements that get made about Paticca-samuppada and the jhanas. This is what they have come on that are very, like, wrong. And if you have an understanding that's in the head, then you can go into these arguments. But basically, as your body feels silence, and for example, some monks in the Ajahn Brahm tradition in Australia will say, let's say that you could do 100 breaths without any thoughts, then you're ready for jhana. And 100 was just a number that came. But, you know, if you could sustain that, then you're ready. Or if you feel piti. And piti is a delight. It's a sensation in the body where your body feels delightful. And the other thing that people say why you shouldn't talk about jhanas is because then people will be so goal-oriented that it becomes counterproductive. That you haven't meditated ever, and then all of a sudden you're demanding that jhanas happen. So usually it's something that can take weeks, months, years, with humility and without craving. you open yourself to this. So they're rare, but now you can go to Spirit Rock and go to a jhana retreat. Or you can, it's interesting that I see that the universe is interesting. I moved to Australia. I'm staying at this rented place before we move in. And I've been thinking a lot about the jhanas and Patichasamuppada. And I'm like, I need to read something else, somebody who has really practiced with these two things, because I can't find a lot of people. And all of a sudden I get an email. Hey, I got your name from so-and-so, and I'm a practitioner in Sydney. I'm in Melbourne for 2 days. Want to meet up? I'm like, yeah, come for lunch. So we sat for half an hour, walked around the Botanic Garden. He goes, you know, Kartapa Dhamma. And I said, you know, I'm interested in the jhanas. Oh, so this is right. A guy named Rob. And so, and this guy has been teaching both things. And so now I'm listening to his talks and listening and for somebody who has been, he died of cancer, but he taught the jhanas and taught Patichasamuppada. So I just wanted to share that with you, that these two things are here in the jhanas. The first jhana is basically you have a pattern. It's vitaka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata are the five things that will happen. And so one is you put an attention in your meditation. And this is where it gets translated as concentration. And I've never liked that word because I think of like math problems or like concentrating, like narrowing your focus on something. And this kind of attention is more, you know, it is a focusing perhaps, but it's more like, okay, I'm going to do the breath or do this. Nimitta can happen, which is sometimes people can see a light or, you know, things can happen. And at this point, if you haven't been meditating for a long time, it can be scary to not feel the breath or to not hear thoughts, right? Because most human beings, it's a constant chatter up here. So what happens? Who are you when there's no thought? And then the breath is subtle. This fear can come up. But if you go through this, then you get piti, which is this delight. And like Ajahn Brahm, this monk, will say, it's better than any orgasm you can think of. And I'm like, well, no wonder people want to get it right away. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, okay, it's free and it doesn't give you side effects like a drug. But you can imagine if you are in a capitalist, greedy culture, that's what we breed. And somebody tells you that there's this thing that is better than an orgasm that you can get while meditating. You can see how people be like, oh, people are going to get all greedy. Okay, fair enough. But I think, so don't do that. But just know that this meditative absorption, the first four, are not as subtle as, I don't have experience for that immaterial ones where the body is no longer felt. But if you go to Rome, Bernini did a sculpture of St. Teresa of Avila doing things, and it does look like she's having an orgasm, just like, you know, with this angel piercing her heart. Because it can be a very strong energy. And the piti, you've heard of the Shakers and the Quakers? You know, the guy with the Quaker Oats? He used to quake and shake, you know, Holy Spirit. And that would be, you know, it's energy in the body. But if you channel that a little bit more, you can feel delight. So it's 8:15. Talk to the person you met today and see if you have any questions or disagreements or things that I've said. So 3 minutes. What's coming up for you with all of this stuff that I'm just basically have given you bullet points and big teachings? What's kind of a lie for you? I'm like, you can say I was totally bored, right? Or you can say, oh, I'm curious about this. So let's do 3 minutes of what are you getting out of this or what are your reactions? Or any questions that are coming up for you? And if you are online, if you have any questions, you can text them now.
Yeah.
Okay. So for this part, is there something that you heard somebody say to you? So from your partner that you think might be good for the whole group to hear? So I'm asking, if you heard a comment or a question or a reflection, and it's okay if there isn't, but I'm just wondering, go ahead. What did you hear that might be interesting for all of us to ponder on?
Hello. Hi. The person really gentle, she made one. And I think from the person that I talked to, it was curiosity, more knowledge. How to spell
curiosity.
How to spell
Patichasamupada.
And get perspective and viewpoints.
Perspectives and viewpoints. I'm repeating because they can't hear you apparently.
Oh, okay.
In the jhanas, okay.
More knowledge.
More knowledge, yeah.
Information you need to try to...
Yeah, have more exposure. Okay, yeah. Thank you. And, you know, I remember I was on a bus and I'm thinking, oh, I wonder, how would you explain paticha? How do you make people... And I thought of Patty doing the cha-cha. And I was like, paticha? Doing cha-cha with Sam. Paticha Sam, and I don't know what pada was. It's like eating pad thai. But I'm like, you know, because when you look it up, but it actually, if you Google dependent origination, you will get the stuff. And, you know, maybe Common Ground could do a study group, because I'm telling you, the opinions. Yeah. Anyone else heard something that might be interesting? We've got 10 minutes, 7 minutes. Yeah.
Came from a Christian religion. And,
someone came from the Christian religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he came from Garcia, the son-in-law came from a Buddhist tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something about his character, you know, like calmness. And that just knows that practice, you know, you change, you soften up a little bit.
Yeah.
That the practice shows up.
Mm-hmm. Noticing how the practice can soften how someone lives in the world, how it changes you, kind of thing. Is that okay? Any questions, just from anybody? Not what you heard, but is there anything that you would like clarification on? Mm-hmm. From online.
Someone saying that they're from New England and the Shakers are shaking Quakers. Not sure whether Quakers struck.
So Quakers didn't quake? Okay. I mean, it's interesting. Like, you know, I remember seeing the Hare Krishnas going into this kind of like, you know, where the body's doing that. And I mentioned the mudras, the hand postures, because my body was just having so much energy. And all of a sudden, my hands went into this thing and I would look and it would be like these traditional mudras that already exist. This is before, now you can get mudra cards. You get mudra books. You can get, but you know, sometimes I would open my eye and I would be like, oh, interesting. You know, like they would be start doing this because the energy would leave my fingers. So it's interesting how, you know, truth is truth. It's not Christian or Buddhist or whatever. There's wrong views. The first scripture of the long discourse is really fun because it's got a list of wrong views. My favorite wrong view is when there's a God who creates universes and then the beings in the universe worship the God and then the God thinks that he's permanent. And that's the wrong view. And I'm like, listen to that. Because India has this expansive thinking in their scriptures. Like there's a painting that I have of Vishnu, God Vishnu sleeping. And out of every pore, a universe is being created. You know? It's just like in all these worlds and all these beings. It's like where eon is defined as a long time. And it's when a bird has a piece of silk in its beak. And once in 100 years, it goes like this on Mount Everest. So an eon is how long it takes for Mount Everest to be at sea level, being worn down with a piece of silk from a bird once every 100 years. Right? I mean, it's like, whoa! I mean, I just love that kind of thinking. And it is kind of post-Einstein. Although scientists go crazy when very casually religious types will say, yeah, it's, you know, it's like, this kind of physics, you know, just casually, but it is interesting how it's matching up. So to finish up, I just want to say that to encourage somebody in a spiritual path is not easy, because people, you know, in a group, people need different things. So one of the teachings that I used to love is like, sometimes you have to go left, right? But what if I'm giving you the directions and I'm behind you? That changes. But then what if you're in a different kind of road? What if you're in Australia? You know, to go left or right has different things when you're driving. And so it's the context. So when you're in a group, sometimes the teaching is, you're taking it too easy. You need to put energy. You need to commit. But if you're in a culture where you're stressed out, you are driven, you are, what you value is accomplishment, that is not what you need to hear. That's what the Thai monks in Ajahn Chah in northern Thailand, they're so relaxed. They needed to hear that. And then these white men came with that, with a militaristic thing, and tried to give it to the monks, and it just didn't work. And they also had a patriarchy where it's so anti non-male, basically, right? So the translation. But keeping it simple in the sense of, how are you going to give this curiosity? Curiosity is lovely because it gives you energy. And it's not one more thing you have to do. It's like, oh, and you know, when I played with, like, I remember maybe it was Thich Nhat Hanh or something, like, you know, pay attention when you hear a phone. And so I was driving in San Francisco, which was so many stop signs. And like at every stop sign, I would breathe. And it never worked for me. It was like, this doesn't work. But I tried it for about a week where I'd be like, okay, stop sign, I'll breathe. I'm like, I just get annoyed. This is not working. But the flexibility to say, you know, I gave it a try for 2 weeks, and breathing at a stop sign is not my practice. But counting my steps is at the moment. You see, I'm constantly thinking of, and you know, the Catholic faith, we go like this. And so you have, may your thoughts, your emotions, and your actions align. May the spiritual path, which is vertical, and the path of the earth align. There's all these symbolisms. And the cross, where you are naked, tortured in front of your mother, like you can't go any lower. And then you're the phoenix that rises. For centuries, the phoenix was important in Christianity. And that image of when you understand dukkha, when you understand the suffering, and then it's like, whoa, right? So you get the, like, you know, these things in all these traditions that kind of show you, like, what's going to bring delight? What's going to be, you know, becoming curious, keeping it simple, and knowing also that this stuff can be also quite nuanced and white, you know? How do we understand our karma? Don't go there. The Buddha gave some warnings. It's like, if you try to understand the first cause for your karma, you'll go crazy. Stop it. So, you know, focus on what's useful. Dukkha. How do we make other people suffer? How do I make myself suffer? That's quite simple. And yet, you might need therapy. You might need to get out of therapy. It's absolutely, absolutely available. Absolutely available. So I finish my talk with this little phrase. A lot of the time I finish my talks with this little phrase. Every time that you work towards your happiness, you're honoring everybody that has ever loved you. And you honor your ancestors. The people that have loved you, they want you to be happy. Yeah? And so, as you work towards your happiness, it helps the world, because happy people are not mean. It's always an honor to sit here, and I love this place, so I'm glad it's here, and I'm glad you can get this time. So, thank you.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.